Recording in progress.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. I got to give it up three times because Mr. Pearsall, along with ITK, are here with you today, and he has two handsome gentlemen in his background. I am so glad to hear it's Monday, July the 26th, and this is the 26th edition of the Watkins Awards. So, Mr. Pearsall, how you doing today?
Absolutely magnificent. Absolutely magnificent.
Man, you are looking good in that blue there, that royal blue. And if you didn't notice, of course, I got on my yellow today. And you know where I got on my yellow, right? You know where I got my yellow on. Because right underneath of it, it says what? Michigan. Well, that's sir. Yes, sir. Well, look here, Mr. Pearsall. It's a great day, despite what goes on. I mean, have you been watching the news lately? I mean, this is the Watkins Award, the number one show, not only in America, but on the planet when it comes to celebrating the achievements of athletes. I mean, student athletes. Athletes who have extraordinary athletic skills and, I mean, unquestionable academic credentials. So, I mean, Mr. Pearsall, what do you think about something like that? That you can find a young man who just happens to be African-American in high school, his senior year, which you know all this didn't happen as a senior. It took 4 years to get to this point. This kid is a 4- or 5-star athlete in basketball, baseball, or football. And then sometimes he is a 4- or 5-star in all three sports. And there have even been others who have played additional sports, excluding the three that I named that we recognize. So what do you think when you find a young man who just happens to be an African-American who has the top grades that he can go to a private school, he can go to an Ivy League school, and not really have to go to, you know, a regular school on an athletic scholarship? What's your thoughts about that?
Well, you know, I'll first start this out, Coach Tate, by letting you know that I'm on an absolute high right now. The high might be in my T-shirt, my glow, my voice, my background, call it what you will. But this past weekend, we had the opportunity to honor one of those individuals. And then I'll go back to answering your question. We were able to go down to Columbia and honor Tonka Hemingway, who is one of those individuals which you speak of. When you talk about the joy in finding an individual who is one of those top athletes in the country and yet one of the top scholars in the country. And so you look at a talk of Hemingway, and I think talking about him somewhat answers the question that you've asked me, Coach Tate, in that he was one of the top defensive tackles and defensive ends in this nation. His brother, just so you know, as you don that yellow T-shirt, was a receiver at the University of Michigan when our very own Devin Gardner was there. In fact, he was the number one target during his last 2 years. And yet, as one of the top defensive linemen in the country, this individual donned a 4.5 GPA. Yeah, I said it, a 4.5 GPA. And so the question you asked me, Mr. Tate, is what do I think of when I'm in search of and or find an individual who is a great athlete and yet a great scholar. I just experienced it. It's euphoria. It's why I do what I do. It shows that there is no excuse for being a subpar student. Because if you can accomplish the things that one Tonka Terrell Hemingway was able to do as a top lineman in the country, recruited and coveted by all, and yet get a 4.5 GPA in the classroom. Really? There's no excuse for mediocrity in the classroom. You can do both. We talked about it last week with Zach. Top basketball player, top football player, and yet you got a 3.9? Talk to me now. The feeling that you get when you talk to the individuals that are doing the things that they need to be doing, doing the things that they're capable of doing, doing the things that we expect, and doing the things that we know that all or most African-American males are capable of doing, and putting that on display because they were encouraged by their parents, their community, their coaches, and individuals around them. There's no better satisfaction for me. How about you, Coach Tate?
Well, first of all, I'm glad you corrected that 3.5. You know, 4.5 is a long way from a 3.5. So thank you for making that immediate correction there. But there's no greater
GPA. I was thinking about my GPA, not his. My bad.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to get into that. I'm not going to make no jokes out of the fact that Tonka has a 4.5 and compared to your GPA. I mean, we see one thing about the Watkins Award, his GPA was certified. We got a committee that makes sure, you know, now you gonna jump out there like that, we're gonna have to certify this, you know. But I, you know, I'm like you. It's no greater joy than having these young men to have these type of accolades academically, you know, and then, you know, they just throw the cherry on top with the athleticism. But, you know, you talk about Tonka, great, great family. I mean, just an awesome family, the mom, the dad, you know, just having the opportunity to meet them, just as humble as apple pie. And you would never know that Tonka was playing all these sports and had those kind of grades. But I'm like you. I'm overjoyed to see it, especially in today's time. Well, it could be yesterday. It could be last year or 20 years ago, 30 years ago when all this started up. I mean, we've always had young men who constantly, every week, we constantly bringing people to the table who are willing to tell their story. Now, it's going to be a while before we bring Tonka up because Tonka got to get out of school first. We're going to put a little pressure on him. He's going to have to graduate academic All-American because all of our guys graduate academic. Nobody wants to be the first to never graduate as an academic All-American. So they all do it. But clearly, I'm overjoyed as well. I mean, when you look at the news, I mean, can you really put your finger on a lot of the negative news that's going on? And here we come to the table with some of the most positive news that one could listen to. And we still get criticized and say that or hear that somebody's going to debate you. They're going to say there's nowhere in the world you got a kid who has a 4.5 and is an All-American in football, baseball, and basketball.
I dare them. Bring them on. I dare them.
Especially in a small town or a small state like South Carolina, but he's from a little small area down there in South Carolina, correct?
Don't be mistaken. Conway, South Carolina. Not Myrtle Beach. Conway. Small town outside of Myrtle Beach, the small town.
Okay, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's a small place.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you that it's a small place outside of a small place.
Right. Okay. So
that was my point.
What is it that is hard to get our listeners or to get people, not all of our listeners, I mean, some just listen because they just want to laugh because they say this isn't true. You know, or they just trying to negate all the bad news and come up with this stuff. The two of them probably dreaming together. They've been brainwashed. I mean, what do you say to a kid who grows up in a major city that says that's not possible?
Well, the first thing that you have to ask yourself is who is telling them or allowing them to believe that that's not possible? Because it obviously is not difficult for them to take a look at the Watkins Award. And for the last 29 years, yes, I said it, almost three decades, it's a long time, we have displayed individuals year after year after year after year, should I say it 30 times, that really debunk anyone that can actually in remotely mention that this is not possible. This is possible all over. And I want to tell you that we're only honoring the people that have come to us through our selection committee that we know about. There are probably many, many more, but the athletes are capable of doing this and they are doing this. This is not something that we're talking about as a dream. This is not something that we talk about people are not capable of. This is not something that, you know, all of a sudden we've made up something that, you know, the rest of America can look at and say, you may be one in a million. This is not one in a million. This is year after year after year. We're showing you five individuals that are absolutely brilliant, and yet they're five-star athletes. And you could talk about all day what it takes to be a five-star football, basketball, baseball player. It's no joke.
Well, you know, that's a good point. I mean, first of all, and I use one word in particular, is consistency. I mean, an individual can't have just one good game. He has to be consistent. This is something that has to go on and on and on and on. The next thing is he has to be focused. I mean, the focus has to be like no other. And you get young men like who we have coming up. I mean, think about some of these major big cities. And sadly, none of them are minus the bad things that go on in these major cities. Now, they go on in these small cities as well. But these major metropolitan cities, specifically, and I'm going to use it as an example because I know this city like the back of my hand. I know it very well. Washington, D.C. It's a lot going on in that town. So for a young man to be able to grow up and, you know, and I'm not taking anything away from Baltimore, Chicago, New York, L.A., Philadelphia, Detroit, Richmond. I mean, I've been in all these places and many, many more. That's how I used to collect my thoughts about the inner city. You hear so many stories about these places. I was one that just wanted to find out because, you know, as a kid growing up, my aunt and my moms would take me to a lot of these places where they had friends. And, you know, of course, different times, different things are happening. But man, in 19, you know, I'm just going to use the time when I understood what was really happening. In 1980, in the 90s, man, don't take my word. I always say that math is the only exact science known to mankind. Look at the numbers of murders. Look at the numbers of crimes that were committed. Look at the numbers of people who were incarcerated. Look at the numbers. And none of these places are remiss from how dangerous it was to grow up in them. I mean, it was dangerous like no other. So what do you think about the kid who comes from the inner cities and how they have to focus? Is it a distraction? I mean, are you trying to tell me that the majority of these guys are coming from the suburbs opposed to the inner cities, Mr. Pearsall?
So I want to tell you this, that we have a proper mix. We have individuals that come from the suburb as well as the inner cities. But everyone has their own journey. You've probably learned, if you've paid attention to and or gone back to listen to the podcast, for the last 25 weeks, everyone had their own individual journey. Everyone had their own individual cross to bear. Everyone had their own obstacle that they had to get over. I'll tell you that having grown up in the inner city, somewhat like you in Baltimore and you in D.C., at the end of the day, you know, we have some obstacles that we have to overcome that are extremely unlike some others who may have grown up in the suburbs. Not to devalue, not to say that those individuals' obstacles and the things that they had to overcome were any better, worse, less, more difficult or less difficult than mine. But at the end of the day, they had to overcome them. You and I both know that being in the inner city, if you articulate yourself a certain kind of way, if you get certain grades and yet consider yourself to be one of the best athletes in that school, in that block, in that area, in that city, you're frowned upon. You're made fun of. You're called some names, and certain people will look at you and kind of make sure that they make an example out of you as a person who has gone away from who it is that they are as an individual and who they want to say our culture is. As an organization, we're trying to change that whole way of looking at our individuals, especially as it pertains to African-American males. And we want people to understand that, you know, when you look at our African-American males, we're brilliant. We're game changers. We're world changers. And yet we can run a 4.2, a 4.3. I just looked at something on Instagram, and I saw one of our Watkins guys down in Georgia, N'Kobe Dean, squatting 500 pounds. He's trying to get a 4.0 at Georgia. He'll likely fall short at a 3.8 with an engineering degree once he gets out of there. But we're the best athletically, right? And I'm not saying we're the only culture that's the best, but we are and are capable of being the best academically as well as the best athletically. And so,
well, you mentioned N'Kobe. And I can tell you, he'll be upset if he get a B in class. That kid is astronomical. But nonetheless, you know, our next guest, or I guess today, is a gentleman that fits something that I know for a fact. And that is, I talked about consistency. I talked about focus. I mean, Doug Dutch comes out of a school down in D.C., Gonzaga College High School. You know, most people do not know. I mean, it's a great school to go to, just a phenomenal school to be a student. But one of the things about that school, it was located in an area, man, when I say unhealthy, I mean, we talking unhealthy. And when we bring them up, we're gonna talk about that. But Doug was able to stay focused, come to school every day, not get caught up in the craziness off of that campus, because right beside of that campus, oh my goodness, I mean, Search and Quarter, man, please, you look that place up. I mean, for him to be able to pull off what he did. Now, we're talking about a guy, another three-star athlete or a three-sport athlete who, you know, certainly was a great athlete. I mean, no
five
question.
Five-star, baby. Five.
No, well, I was saying three-sport. I didn't mean to say three-star. You just listen. Remember, you talked about some 3.5 and 4, so I owe you one. just making sure you're listening, you don't fall asleep. But to say the least, this kid went to a school that's known for its academics. He goes down there and not only become an extraordinary three-sport athlete in football, basketball, which is known in D.C., and track and field. Now, let's get it straight. Like I indicated, he was an awesome student. So he didn't have to get a football scholarship. That wasn't necessary. He could have gone to an Ivy League school. But one of the things I'm going to ask him as well, that's going to be part of my questions, is he could have essentially went to many of the top programs to play football. I mean, he had an opportunity to go to a neighboring school, Maryland. Everybody goes over to Maryland University, who is a top football player. Virginia, he could have gone down to Miami at the university, or Florida. But he chose Michigan. And that was undoubtedly, he was going to go to school and get his degree. But not only did he do that, you know, we talking about living out the ultimate dream as a football player. I mean, everybody wants to be an NFL player one day. But for you to be able to go to college to someplace like a Michigan and then return back home and be able to play for the Redskins, and I shouldn't say that, Washington football team. I forget. Washington football team. I am sorry, DMV. And go just up the road and play for the Ravens? Man, look here. This dude was in utopia. He was in heaven. But with all that said, welcome to the show, Douglas Doug Dutch. How you doing today, sir?
I'm good. Definitely appreciate you guys having me on. How you doing, Everett?
Hey, big dog.
Good, man.
Doug, let me get straight to this message here. Mm-hmm. Man, how in the world do you go to Gonzaga knowing that you got a neighborhood that close to you that any time, and I'm sure in your time that you went to Gonzaga, Something kicked off. How can you stay focused in class and as an athlete in a community like that? I'm not saying it's, you know, like it's that crazy, but still, you got to be focused. How did you do it?
For me, it was simple. Ever since I was a kid, it was engraved in me to work hard and put forth your best foot and your best effort. And that just stuck with me because I saw how hard my parents invested in me as a young age to be successful, especially as a young Black man. They said, hey, school and education is always going to last regardless. Like your football skills, basketball skills, they may come and go, but your mental fortitude, as long as you enact on that and grow every day, you'll never feel defeated in life. And that stuck with me because ever since I stepped foot on Gonzaga, I made it a goal of mine to be successful, not only in the classroom, but on the field and whatever endeavor I wanted to pursue, whether it was basketball, football, or track. And I just went to school every day. And well, it was an all-boys school to begin with, so there was no distractions. So that was the easy part. But just coming to school and knowing that I had to work and to be able to say, hey, you need these grades in order to play. So once that was set foot, the rest was history. I put forth my best foot and just led a life where I was like, hey, I want to be successful. And these are the goals that I set forth for myself. And I just worked at them every day, regardless of how hard school was or how hard it was perceived to be. I just knew, hey, I can study. I can be good at sports and just work my tail off to do what I want in life.
You know, one thing about you, mm-hmm. you blend in. I mean, clearly, you're just, nobody knew. You could be walking down, look, I know the neighborhood very well. You could be walking down North Capitol Street. You could be walking down H Street. You could be coming down Florida Avenue. Oh, I know the neighborhood. You be coming down K Street or L Street. But how did you blend in so well and be able to focus? Because most people, you know, they can't come off from them streets and walking down the street and then come into Gonzaga and then kind of depress themselves. How did you do it?
To me, like, I feel as though, like, I'm a easy person to talk to, so I could get along with anybody, whether or not you're black, white, Spanish, purple, blue. I just looked at it as, hey, this could be a potential friend, a potential ally, somebody that may go to Gonzaga or someone that may just be noticing things from afar. So I just always wanted to have that persona to be like, hey, he's a good guy. He works hard and he could be your friend. And with that, people were easily come up to me, congratulations on this, or hey, I saw this game that you played in, or dang, you were fast as a freshman. So I just always wanted to be a people person, because I know coming from DC, we live in a predominantly black area, but I felt comfortable in my own shoes to begin with. So that just made me be able to say, hey, I could talk to anybody, because when my parents sit me down at night and say, you're no better than anybody, that just stuck with me as well too. And hey, I went out into the world and it's your oyster. It's what you make of it.
So you down there at Gonzaga, you get to the 11th grade. Mm-hmm. What's going on in the Dutch household? I mean, now you're in the 11th grade. 12th grade is coming up. I mean, to be on Miami or Florida or even Maryland U's radar, mm-hmm. What's going through your mind coming up to your last year, and what should that high school student who's going to be a senior this year be thinking about?
First and foremost, hey, how can I save my parents some money? That was my thing. Like, they invested in so much of me as a child. I was like, I don't want you to have to pay for high school. I don't want you to have to pay for college. It's on me now. So with that mentality, like I said, I just went to school, did my work, prepared in the classroom. But then at nighttime, my mom was like, hey, you need anything or how can we help? And I was like, no, I got this. I'm good. But point me in the right direction. Cause I mean, I know I'm still considered a child. I'm not a grown man yet. So you guys see these college coaches who are talking to me. You know, the environment that I grew up in, you know, the environment that we have here at home. What do you feel as though would be the best avenue for me to pursue? And they gave me their input, and I just felt it in my heart that, hey, like, you got to go into your senior year. Don't let people down. Don't say it was a fluke that you had a good junior year, but you want to finish out strong. And football at that time was my big passion, because I already knew I was going to go to college to play football and not basketball. So I just had it in my mind like, hey, I need to focus, make sure I finish and graduate. I wanted to graduate with above a 4.0, so I did that. And with that mentality going into senior year, college coaches were knocking down my doors, and it opened up other avenues as well too, because I was able to play in the Army All-American game since I did have such a great season my sophomore year and junior year. Then coming into my senior year, people saw, hey, he's at a great college high school and he's doing well. So that drove me every day to want to continue on. And hey, it just felt good getting recruited and feeling like you're the best thing since sliced bread.
Oh man, trust me, I know what you're talking about. So, Doug, you look, I know that field that's down there on North Capitol. Yeah. So you leave that field and you go to the University of Michigan. Mm-hmm. What's the feeling when you walk into that stadium and there's no one in there compared to the first game? You got a Michigan uniform on and you come in that state. What's that feel, man?
It was like night and day. It's eerie because like we got to go in like late at night before our first game and see like how it was and just say, hey, just picture yourself playing on this field doing well. And then going out, running out that tunnel for the first time in front of 115,000 fans. And they cheering for you, wanting you guys to win, and you in arms with your brothers. It's a feeling you can't really explain, and that you, like, it's like a drug in essence. Like, you want to keep getting it and keep getting it and making sure you're not letting your team down. And that's how we were at Michigan. And those who stay will be champions. That's how we, that's the mentality we had, and that's how we carried it on the field.
Man, I mean, you know, you're at Gonzaga, mm-hmm. and at Gonzaga, of course, you got a great environment that's preparing you for college.
Exactly.
But once you get to Michigan and see those classes, you see the change in the mindset of the coaches, because you're talking big business now. I mean, clearly when you get up there to U of M, I mean, man, to see all those cars parked all over the place, yeah. and I've been up there in Ann Arbor, man, it is so. What's the difference of your of the expectation of your college coach in comparison to your high school coach? Did it change?
The expectations were you had to give maximum effort, and you had to be eligible. So there was no time for games, because I've seen people who fell by the wayside who either got kicked out of Michigan or who made bad choices. So the expectation was the same, because Gonzaga, you have high standards. Michigan, you have high standards. And it's not an easy school either. Academics is top 10 in the country. So you had to be on your A game, just like how you were in the weight room and on the field, because if you weren't eligible, the coaches didn't care how many stars you got when you were recruited. If you were starting, if you were second string, if you were coming in as a freshman, they say, we want to represent Michigan in a certain way. And you have to carry yourself as a gentleman and as a man. And you come to learn that as you get older. I mean, coming, stepping on campus as an 18-year-old young man, you go through your trials and tribulations, but you see and you learn, and you try to, like I said, put your best foot forward, just like how you would in high school, because you have, once you get to that level, now it's, hey, I'm preparing for my future, and I want to eat too, and I want to continue to be successful. And these are the certain things that I have to do, whether or not it's improving the weight room, keep my GPA at a certain grade point average, or just go out there and practice and give it your all so you can play on Saturdays.
Well, you know, I'm a, before I turn you over to Mr. Pearsall, look, I knew you went up there to Michigan and you had your DC swagger. So what was going on when you started listening to that go-go? Come on, man. Tell me. I know you had your go-go music up there.
I got clowned a couple times. They were like, what the hell is this? So I was like, man, it's DC. Y'all got to worry about this. So I tried to put a couple people on, but they wasn't feeling it.
Well, one thing I know, you went up there and you knew you had, you know, some wide shoulders, and you knew you had DC that was not only rooting for you to, you know, to be the best that you possibly could be, but you knew also that you definitely was going to do the best that you could do. And we certainly appreciate everything. And with that said, I'm going to turn you over to Mr. Pearsall, because I know he got about seven different names for it. But be careful now, Pearsall, because you know them D.C. people watching this show now. It's a lot of people in D.C. watching this show, and I don't want them to mistake me as you if I got on a royal shirt. You that Pearsall got? No, I'm Tate, not Pearsall. So, hey, thanks again. You know, Pearsall is all yours.
Tyrone, man, I don't know why you have to think you need to call me out. You know I do what I do. Douglas Dutch, a.k.a. D.D., a.k.a. D-Dutch, a.k.a. the original Gonzaga Eagle, a.k.a. Mr. Michigan Wolverine, a.k.a. Mr. Big House, a.k.a. Mr. Reception or Interception, a.k.a. Mr. Wide Receiver or Defensive Back, a.k.a. 2004 Best Football Player in Washington, D.C. Excuse me, Dougie. Excuse me, Dougie Dutch, you on. Welcome to the show, baby.
Appreciate it, man. Miss you, Everett.
You know it, man. You out there on the West Coast. You know we get to you when we can, but when we get together, it's always special. Now, Doug, you know, when I think back to 2004, and it seems like yesterday to me, one of the things that jumps out is the fact that everyone from that class played professional sports. It is absolutely amazing to me when I look at that class and see that we have all these 4.0 and above guys that are in that class and all play professional sports. That is absolutely amazing. And yet for you, I had an opportunity to meet much of your village when you were introduced to me. Your lovely mother, Veronica, and your dad, Doug Sr., who introduced me not only to you as a family, but opened your home to me, made dinner for me, invited me to come over at any time, and my family to come over at any time. More importantly, I had an opportunity to meet your football coach. And Coach Kenny basically let me know who you were and told me more about you than you ever would know, and all being exceptional in terms of value. So when I talk about all the people, even outside of them, that gave me an idea who Doug Dutch was, and we talk about the fact that the Watkins Award honors the five-star athletes all over the country, your athleticism meant nothing. It's all the things I came to know about you from other people, but more importantly, from you, your family, and those who you knew, nothing about the fact that they were having those types of conversations with me. Now, Tyrone is from D.C., and one of the things that he kind of stole from me is the fact that when you invited me to come down for the Hall of Fame ceremony, and one of the things I left out is AKA Gonzaga Hall of Famer. I'll say it now. When I came down there for the Hall of Fame ceremony, I don't know D.C. like that. And I looked right next to the campus, and I said to myself, oh my God, as esteemed as Gonzaga is, the projects is right next door. Are you kidding me? How are they keeping these kids focused? And how are all these high dollar individuals attending this high school right next to the projects? And so he talked a little bit about what I want to ask, but the question I have to you is, tell some of our listening audience, what were some of your biggest obstacles really being in that environment, going to high school in that environment, but coming out as one of the top scholar athletes in the country? What were some of your top obstacles in that situation?
So one obstacle that stuck with me to this day that I vividly remember, I was in my 10th grade, third period chemistry class, and I was taking a test. And like you could hear commotion and you could feel your surroundings. And like I heard like people yelling outside. And I see people who are like under the influence on drugs. And I just looked over and I was like, they had bars and everything and they're just walking past looking all kind of down bad. And I just said to myself, I never want to be that person. And Gonzaga will teach me the lessons that I need to propel me forward, whether or not it's even if I played another down in football, at least I know I could fall back on my education. And that was the biggest obstacle to me is, hey, don't let these outside obstacles fool you, because that could be you one day. So try your hardest to stay away from that and never be caught in a bad situation. So that was my biggest obstacle, was overcoming adversity and staying on the straight and narrow. Because like I said, you got parties, you got girls, you got all these other outside things that can get you in trouble. And I just had a goal in my mind that I never wanted that to be me. And I wanted to make it to the NFL to make my parents proud, my family proud, but also at the same time, maintain a high grade point average, because I know how much time and effort that they instilled in me. So it was just my way of giving back. So my biggest obstacle was just not being a failure and being the best Doug I could be, and worry and let the chips fall where they may.
Absolutely. Now, one of the things that we talked about before you got on air is the fact that everybody had their own journey. You know, Tyrone grew up in D.C. I grew up in Baltimore. I know you had a little bit of a blended up upbringing. And so talk about some of the obstacles that some of the student athletes face that you may have faced as well, or that you know that they may have faced being in an inner city environment, but also facing some of the obstacles in a suburban environment. What are some of the things that may be the same, but also maybe a little bit different, that would help them to overcome as you did?
So a couple obstacles that I noticed, like some of my friends, like they didn't have the same situations that I may have been in family-wise. And they had issues with that. They like would miss school or they would get like suspended. But overcoming those same type of obstacles is, even though I lived in the suburbs, I still had to maintain, like I said, maintain a certain grade point average. I had to make sure I got enough sleep. So that's anywhere you go. Make sure I'm getting a proper hydration and nutrition to make sure I could be the tip top athlete, especially as my body was growing. I just wanted to make sure that, hey, I'm in the best possible position that I can be, and I don't want to lose that opportunity. So seeing whether or not you, hey, if obstacle is to make your varsity team so you could get a chance to maybe get a scholarship or start off on JV, or you might not be starting your sophomore year like how I did, but just keep working, because those are the adversities that build mental fortitude and help you propel yourself as a man. And those obstacles, learning, hey, it might not be, it's not going to always be easy. So running those sprints after practice is one of the things that I started to do, because I knew, hey, I'm playing offense, I'm playing defense, and I'm playing special teams. So when these coaches are looking at me, they don't want to be like, oh, well, this kid's tired, he can't continue on, or they're asking too much of him. No, I wanted to be a beast in everything. So the obstacles that my coaches gave me was, hey, we need you on offense, we need you on defense, we need you on special teams. So that obstacle of being tired wasn't an option for me. So like I said, I wanted to be in the tip-top shape mentally, and then got my body right to play on those Saturday games. And then, like I said, the rest was history.
Absolutely excellent. Great answer, because I know it's going to help a lot of people. People have blended opportunities, but people have both. Dude, you had to overcome both the inner city and the suburbs. Now, you know, we have some listeners where they'll either be faced with, or they, you know, it's in their future, or it's something that they're going through right now where they have to look at whether I go to an institutional college to play in my hometown or abroad. Now, I know the challenges of it. You know that after so many years of dealing with Watkins guys who have selected to leave their hometown and play in another city because it was a better fit, it was more comfortable for them, it was a dream, or for whatever reason, they decided to make that move, it was the best move for them. One of the things I wanted to ask you is that, what are some of the things that help you to adapt to going to a college and playing at an institution, especially like a Michigan State, which is tougher than most professional organizations when it comes to the NFL football? The people who play at Michigan say it's easier to play in the NFL. We don't have 111,000 people watching us every week. What are some of the things that made it comfortable for you, and some of the things that you had to overcome leaving Maryland and leaving all the people that said you should go to a school closer by and playing at Michigan, where you don't have the support of your coach as much, your high school as much? I should say the influence, not the support. You maintain the support of all those people, but the influence of all that, what helped you to be successful at Michigan so far from home?
Me being my biggest critic, and me not wanting to fail, because knowing I left home, I didn't want to come back home and be looked at as a failure. So that propelled me every day to say, hey, I have wide shoulders. Michigan gave you this opportunity for a reason, so I don't want to squander it away on idle thoughts. So that propelled me every day to say, hey, Doug, you're a grown man now. You're seen as a grown black man on the street. So when you're 18, the decisions you make are going to determine your future and to determine the different outcomes that or obstacles that you may face. So, hey, driving drunk isn't going to be an option for me. Getting in trouble, like I said, with females wasn't going to be an option for me. Knowing that I had to maintain a certain grade point average, especially coming from Gonzaga, school wasn't a factor for me. It was just me saying, hey, now how can I juggle a full-time job in football and a full-time job at Michigan? And our coaches and our support system was A1 at Michigan. And I called my parents every day. And I was lucky. I had a family member in Michigan at the time. My uncle was in the Coast Guard, so I could call him, go to his house, see him. So it was like home away from home, and just relying on, hey, I know I have people back in D.C. that have my back. So just do the best that you can and come out on top. And that was that.
You don't understand how many lives you changed by the things you said, and people who really will take what you said, be able to build on it and be able to grow from that. Now, I think one of the toughest things that you go to the next level is to be able to play in your hometown. Yeah. Dude, you play for two teams in your hometown. How on earth do you deal with the influence of all the people that are your friends, family, and so forth in your hometown, in the team that they root for? How on earth Do you play professional sports in your hometown and cope with all, again, the external influences?
It was a blessing. And especially when you get to that level, it could be taken like that. So when it came to like tickets and stuff like that, I left that up to my family. But other than that, that allowed me to like focus strictly on football and the goals that I had in mind for myself. So that was the biggest thing for me is like, don't squander this opportunity. Like I said, cause it could be gone in a heartbeat. So just realizing that, hey, you have a support system that people are going to be in the stands, but you're never going to see those people even when you're on the field. So just focus on what you can control. And that's one of the things that I live by is control what you can control. Don't let outside forces influence you or say, hey, Doug, we need to go do this. I have a mind of my own, and that's how I like to carry myself.
Oh, man. Again, great. I mean, I've seen people do it well, very few. I've seen most people squander the opportunity where a lot of times the external influences have actually taken them away from the focus of accomplishing the things that that they're looking to accomplish. Now, if you look at that journey from the time that I met you when you were in high school at 17, 18 years old and until now, obviously, you know, you've done a lot, dude. I'm so proud of you. And, you know, we love you as an organization, and you've always been a great representative of what Watkins Award is all about. But through that journey, give me an idea of what the Watkins Award has meant to you.
The Watkins Award has meant a lot to me over the years. I've had brothers that I'm still in communication with that I can call and say, hey, how you doing? Or they're just like, hey, Watkins brother, how's your family doing? And it makes you feel good to be a part of an organization, to have like a mentor like such as yourself that helped me along the way. That showed me support at various games, at various events, and just having that extra family outside of my internal family was just a blessing in disguise, because the hard work that I put in the dark came to light because the Watkins Award and the Watkins family approached me because of the accolades that I was able to accomplish in high school, and it carried on into college, and it propelled me into a professional athlete. So the Watkins Award and the Watkins family have been, like I said, a second family. Has been the world. And it just showed me that, hey, when people put their minds to things, that they can accomplish anything, not necessarily just with sports, but like how we have this podcast right now, having minds come together to give their thoughts and their ideas and just to give back. And that's what it's been meant to. That's what it's meant to me. They gave to me, so I was able to give back.
Excellent. Excellent, man. Definitely appreciate that. You know, we're doing the best that we can to make sure that we feed you, we edify you, and we give you what you need to support you. And that's really important from all the people, not just me, but the people who are behind me, and I stand on their shoulders. Now, taking a look at some of the adversity that you had to overcome, one of the things I want to point out is the fact that, you know, whenever there was an obstacle, you didn't hurdle it. Dude, you high jumped it. And if people know track understand what a hurdle is, to high jump, you know, a hurdle means that you cleared it excessively. And so, you've always been a team player. And one of the things that I look at with a lot of the players that really go to a team, especially at the college level, and the team asked them to do so much. I think one of the things that you said that I didn't even think about was that when you were in high school, if they wanted you to play special teams, you did it to the best of your ability. Defense, offense, whatever it was that you had to do, you really applied yourself 150%. You were the best at it, and you excelled at it. I think that when you went to Michigan, it was the same type situation where you were so athletically gifted that whatever changed within the program from a positional standpoint, from a coaching standpoint, when they asked you to do something, you did it to the best of your ability. Sometimes that's almost to the deficit of the next level. So you served Michigan well, but when it came time for you to make that step to the next level, sometimes like a James Bodders and many other individuals that play so many different positions. He played, you know, every linebacker position, then defensive end, and yourself playing offense and defense. When they go to evaluate you, they don't have enough information, tape, film, and competition to say, here's what we want to put you at. And so when you took a look at them bringing you into the NFL, knowing that you had the physical capability of doing so, what really was the mindset that you had, you know, when the Skins brought you in and said, oh, you know what, we're going to have you play defense because you knew you were a great receiver all along and forever, but you also knew I could tap somebody too. I can lay some hat. I can cover the dude. It's the best. I know their move before they make it. What is the mindset that you have when you sacrifice the best of you for your team, and yet when you go to that next level and have to transition and adjust, you have to do whatever it is that they ask you to do with the fact that you didn't have enough tape to prove that you were the best at what they were asking you to do? How do you overcome that obstacle to achieve at the next level?
So I overcame it by as soon as we had like our first practice, like I wanted to go against Santana Moss. So they were like, oh, okay. So hopping out there is like, you can't be scared when you get there, because the competition that I faced every day at Michigan set me up for success in the NFL and allowed me to feel comfortable knowing that, hey, these guys may be older, but they have the same set of skills and they put the same type of work in I did. So when I got there and practiced and meshed with my DB room and studied tape and got better, it felt good when the coaches said, oh yeah, you belong in this league and you can play in this league. And that's the type of gratitude that you look for. And putting in that hard work got me there, not being scared, going in practice, trying to knock out Mike Sellers, who was one of the biggest fullbacks that you ever seen, and getting respect from people like that was like, okay, yeah, I definitely belong here. And I love this game. So I'm going to lay my hat on you and I'm going to show this 4-3 speed.
That's what's up. And you did it, man. You did it well. Now, you know, a lot of times, and I haven't had as many people call you as I should, the transition to corporate America or the after NFL life is always extremely, extremely tough, because you have now put all of your efforts into making sure, as you mentioned, you're the best athlete, the best football player, the best, scholar that you could possibly be. But again, it's a transition. And so, I always like our folks to hear, we know that when you played, and you could reiterate some of the things you did, you always gave back to the community when you were at Michigan. You always gave back to the community when you were with the Washington football team, that no-name team down south. We always know that you were the best at what you did when you were with the Ravens, that better team up north. But, we're going to get some hate mail. I know Tyrone going to say it. But tell us some of the things and the great things that you're doing right now.
So currently, I'm a father now. I have my daughter, Jordan. She's 4 years old. So that's like my little princess and the light of my life. But other than that, once football ended, some family things happened. After I was in Canada, I came back and I got my master's degree in business administration. So that was one of the things I always put a goal to, is like, even though you play football, might go to the league, continue your education to make your family proud, because that's what my mom always wanted me to do. So that was a notch on my belt. And then now I work for DoorDash. I'm a growth executive. And we just started a new vertical. It's called DoorDash Drive in the Brooklyn, Manhattan area. And then also another thing on the side that I'm doing to try to give back to the community is now opening up a Floyd Mayweather gym in Annapolis next year with my family. So you guys can be on the lookout for that.
Wow.
So that'll be good. And that'll be happening around February. So just keeping my mind right. I stay physically fit, try to run a mile every day. And just stand on the straight and narrow and being a good dad. So, it's crazy. Like now, like looking back, I'm 35 and I remember meeting you like how you said, 16, 17 years old. Time flies, but it doesn't stop for no man. And I don't never want to rest on my laurels. I just want to keep getting better. Football might be over now, but I want to keep having that forward trajectory and do the best that I can. And like I said, give back and give people fitness and make them have a healthy life as well.
Excellent. So I say, AKA again, Hall of Famer, AKA Father of the Year, AKA Entrepreneur, AKA one of the best examples of being a Wildcats man you possibly can be and dealing with adversity, especially from the hometown, the DMV. So, man, appreciate you coming on the show. I know I've talked way too much, but man, I just get carried away when getting the opportunity to talk to you, big. You know what I'm saying? Dougie Fresh, you're on. Let me turn you back over to Coach Tate.
Appreciate it.
Well, I'm blown out of the water, but hey, all I can say to you, Doug, a lot of people talk about DC and the negative aspect of DC. You are certainly a shining star. I appreciate everything that you've done. I mean, yeah, we both know that Sercin Quartum can be extremely rough, but But there's some good people over there. I grew up in that area, as I've indicated. And man, some of my best friends were over there. It's just, you got two sides to every story. There's always, you know, somebody that's doing something they're not supposed to be doing. But overall, it was a great place. And I, you know, I had to take my hat off to you that you could deal with what was going on over there. And I know that Coach Lucas, who was very well known in the neighborhood, so I knew him very well, and I know he wouldn't tolerate the shenanigans from you as well, so you had to stay focused. So we appreciate everything. I'm going to make sure the next time I'm in town that I get involved, especially in the community. But hey, now that you got that Floyd Mayweather gym about to open up, one of your first members, he's sitting on the other side. So you start getting, that means he's going to be closer to Annapolis from Baltimore. So there's no excuse that he can't get over there to the gym. At least,
hey, how can someone get in contact with you? How can someone get in contact with you, Doug, and your gym and so forth?
Oh, email me, text me, anyway.
Instagram. Give us your address. Give us your handle. The social media.
It's DougieFresh15.
DougieFresh15. At DougieFresh15.
DougieFresh15. We're going to get on top of. They can always go to the National Alliance of African American Athletes website as well. So thanks again. Our special guest, Doug, the man. You got T. Tate and, of course, J. Emmett Pearsall, who's headed over to the gym in Annapolis in February. He got until February to get ready. T. Tate again with the Watkins Award. We appreciate you stopping by, ladies and gentlemen. And, of course, have an awesome and beautiful day. Thanks, Doug, again.
Thanks, Doug. We love you, brother.
Love y'all, too, man. See y'all.
See you next Monday. You gotta do is put your mind to it.